Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We've got a party cast lined up today. We've got Purnell here. We've got Chris here. We've got Aki here. And we've got Dave K here. How is everybody doing?
Pretty all right.
What? How?
It's my favorite when I just ask and like it's just a random mishmash of replies.
All at the same time, and all while our microphones are malfunctioning, apparently.
Yes, apparently.
Wait, it was mine?
No, go back to the paranoid part. What?
Huh?
I'm getting a root canal tomorrow, so I'm paranoid.
What are you, like, you think it's going to go wrong or something? Like,
I've never had one before.
They give you drugs.
Everyone that keeps talking about them tells me about how bad it was, and I don't...
I will say it will be a feeling you're not used to because you've never had one before, but I think those people are blowing it way out of proportion. They inject you with some freaking like painkillers, and if they aren't enough, they give you stronger painkillers to the point where your mouth is so numb you're gumming the way home. So it's not a big deal. I'm not saying that as to pretty much, you know, dismiss your concerns. I'm saying it as a way to let you know that it may not be as big a deal as you think it is because of what other people have been telling you. I've had a couple root canals in my life. I'm not proud of that.
I've had a few. Obviously, I've had my teeth issues because I only have a handful left. But I've had a few root canals, and honestly, if you've got a good dentist, you've got nothing to worry about. You won't feel a thing. It'll feel weird, but you won't feel pain. It'll feel like someone's flossing your head.
Yes, because I can tell you right now, and I think Joe can agree with this too, is like, it can literally be a situation where, like, if you didn't have painkillers, it would be like somebody's, like, just, like, grabbing and, like, tugging at your tooth at a very sensitive spot. You're like, your head's like, oh, God, I'm moving my head. But with the painkillers, you're like, oh, she's pulling at my tooth, but I don't feel it.
Like, if you have a shitty surgeon or a shitty dentist, like the kind that's also a barber and a surgeon, then your experience will probably be a little different.
Dr. Nick from The Simpsons.
Hi, Dr. Nick. Hi, everybody.
So is the flossing of the head thing permanent, or?
No, it's just when he's doing the root canal.
Yeah.
It's weird when he's doing it. And then when it's done, it feels normal.
Yes.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, okay. And there's, you know, you'll be sore, obviously, depending on what work gets done, but you've got some good meds, you should be fine.
Okay.
Yes.
I probably won't have. So that's going to be great.
Yeah, so don't stress it. Like, it's really not as big of a deal as you might be thinking it is. It'll be fine.
Yeah, you'll be all right. We got this.
Yeah, the biggest thing I'm worried about is how much genetics is going to play into the roots I have, because my mom has an obscene amount of roots in all of her teeth, and all of them... not only are there more roots than there should be, each clump of roots is larger than they should be. So I'm just terrified of that.
That's the dentist's job to figure out. That's their job. They get paid for it. Don't think about that. Let them do their job, give you good drugs, get your tooth cleaned up, and then send your ass home. It's not as bad as you're thinking it is. You're making it out to be way bigger than it's going to be.
I'm sure I am, significantly, too.
Oh, yeah. So
all I do is worry. That is every second of every day of
my life. We'll just let medical science decide how many roots your teeth have.
There it is. That's the stuff. Hostess.
Yeah, I just know.
No, that's why you have so bad teeth many, in the first place.
Has so many, and they're just so much of it that not very many dentists can actually deal with her teeth properly because it's such a fucking mess in her mouth that she has to go to just
one of the couple. But did they figure that out? But did they figure that out before they did the root canal, or was it during a root canal? They said, well, we got to stop the procedure. You've got 50 roots.
I assume they probably figured it out beforehand, but she had to go to numerous places to try and get it properly fixed. Because,
properly fixed, but
yeah, because they kept doing root canals and it wasn't solving the issue because they weren't getting all of it taken care of.
Ah, well, I'd say if that's a genuine concern, I'd say just bring it up. I mean, worst case scenario, they'll look for extra roots, I guess. And if they can't spot anything, they'll be like, yep, yeah, well, we didn't see anything out of the ordinary. We scraped your mouth out and now you go home. And if something weird happens, then you got to get your mom already did the legwork. Just go to her specialist.
And if they don't see any roots, tell them to watch The Tonight Show. The roots.
I'm just picturing the mouth root situation looking like a box of attic Christmas lights, and it's bringing me a lot of joy. Perhaps more than it should.
Or Acolyte says they'll get to the root of the problem. Don't worry.
Please don't turn my misery into puns, people. Please do that to someone else's.
Oh, damn. We had to be doing it to someone else's.
I mean, I have thoughts on it. You want the tooth?
Oh, God.
I'm just thinking, lie. You're like, don't do it. Don't do it at all. But you're like, no, do it to someone else. Pass that pain to another.
Everyone's going to do puns at somebody. I just don't want it to be done with me because I fucking hate puns. All the rest of you like puns. I hate them.
I do love me a good pun. I ain't going to lie on that.
Yeah.
Puns are the shit.
Now, how's everyone else doing that doesn't have a root canal this week?
Man, I just hope that my fucking review is over before my edible kicks in. Otherwise, I'm not going to be any good.
Why did you take an edible before the show if your intent was to hopefully have it kick in after your review's done?
Because I'm riddled with arthritis, and it's been bugging me all day. Because sometimes you just have days where shit hurts. And I had about enough.
Now I get you.
But if we get to my turn and my brain is like fully through the Stargate, I apologize in advance.
Through the Stargate. Well, are you reviewing Stargate tonight? Nope. It's like I could be. I very well could be.
They wouldn't trust me with Stargate.
I don't know. If you're talking about popping edibles, I would totally trust you with Stargate.
Playing it or reviewing it? Because I feel like playing it. The Stargate seems like a game you'd actually have to be good at video games to play.
Little column A, little column B.
I guess it's up to you, Dave. Do you want to go earlier than fourth?
Nah, we're good.
Buckle up, motherfuckers. We're in this for the long haul.
Yeah.
Now we need to make every review like 40 minutes long to really test him.
Push him to the limit.
He'll just push start doing like Taz and Excalibur doing 4 a.m. darks to reference. He'll understand.
Oh, God. If trust me, like, the last thing you want is me referencing Ray J. Johnson on here.
You could call him Ray. You could call him Jay. But don't call him washed up because he does 3 reviews a day.
I don't do 3 reviews
fucking
a month.
Yeah. What are you talking about?
I didn't get into podcasting to fucking work hard. I'll tell you that.
Very true. None of us did. Poor Acolyte, thank you so much for dropping a sub. Also, earlier before we started, Latino dropped a sub as well. So thank you both for dropping subs. Love having you here. Love seeing you both. I also love AEW. Dave, you and I watched some AEW this past weekend, and we're going to annoy everybody else with some WrestleCast for a few minutes. Holy shit, what an event. All In was just all amazing.
I mean, it was all in. You know, they set themselves up, you know, they set expectations really, really high. As high as I'm probably going to be in about 45 minutes.
God,
you know, they sold like 81,000 tickets. They're in Wembley. You know, now they have to go out there, all of them, and you know, and put on an event that will actually deliver on all the anticipation they've built up, and they fucking did it.
They did, top to bottom, awesome card.
It was four hours that felt like 2 hours.
It really flew by because of the pre-show.
Well, that's true.
And the pre-show was actually like 2 hours, so you could bump that another hour if you wanted.
I only saw the team matches,
It was a hell of a day, though. And I love the fact that we started at like noon and it was over by like five.
Yeah, I still had my whole evening ahead of me to do stuff with.
That was beautiful.
I wasn't up until midnight on a Sunday like I usually am with wrestling.
Yeah, I hope they do that more often. They did confirm they're going back next year, so we'll have to get me, you, Adam, Tim, we'll have to get all together and do another big Wrestlecast for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I was so happy with the event we got. It was really, really
good shit.
If anything, I think some stuff over-delivered, to be perfectly honest. Yeah, like
now people have expectations.
Well, I mean, just like Chris Jericho is a very good wrestler, but he is in his 50s. Yeah. You know, he is not the athlete he used to be, which, you know, he's in his 50s. Obviously, he's not. But I mean, he kept up with Will Ospreay, who is an incredible athlete. Granted, he has a dog brain, but he's an incredible athlete and capable of all this crazy stuff. And Jericho fucking went out there and met him halfway. You know, he gave him everything and put him over. Like,
if there was one match on the card that you would tell the rest of the folks here to watch to get them interested in AEW, what match would you suggest?
I would say Ospreay Jericho is one for sure. I mean, it depends. If they are sickos like myself, then the Stadium Stampede would also be one.
That's my choice.
just because it is full of sicko shit. It's a big crazy brawl that's like impossible to follow, but it's just chaos unfolding everywhere.
Chaos, which
is great. Sickos is a thing.
Big fan of that. I am a hog and I will eat that slop. trying to think. The Bucks FTR tag match also. Just in terms of, for thinking, like, you know, what could they watch on All In that is something they can expect regularly from AEW? Then, like, yeah, Ospreay Jericho and Young Bucks and FTR. Honestly, the main event too, like MJF Adam Cole was very, very good.
Yeah, for a company that doesn't tell stories, right?
Yeah, it's a shame they're a dead and dying company that only books, you know, high spots and flips and people stab each other with forks.
Skewers.
They don't have the rich storytelling pedigree of, you know, Roman Reigns spending 3 years frowning at his cousins until they turn on each other, where nothing ever fucking changes. Just get one boring 7 hour long main event after another. Like, Roman Reigns' entrance is longer than fucking Sandman's entrance, and he didn't even do anything.
Oh, I know. At least with the Sandman, you're like smashing
beer. That's the match. that's the babyface shine is his entrance. People he goes singing right from Sandman. That to getting his ass kicked. It's great. Yeah.
Pernell, how was your weekend? You did some traveling, didn't you?
Yeah, it was a good weekend. It sucks to be back. You know how it goes when you leave town. You take a weekend, you get to kind of make believe for a little bit, like, oh, this is what life is all about. And then you're like, fuck, I gotta go back home to work and all that other shit. Woof. But I was at Myrtle Beach, and that was actually fun while I was there. Got to see the Atlantic Ocean. They have way too many pancake houses there. I mean, they have a lot of pancake houses there. I was able to hang out with a number of friends. One of which I don't get to see in them very often, so that was kind of nice. And for some reason, we watched the entirety of Berserk over the course of some of the evenings when we were there. Like, oh, we're just going to settle up after we've all been playing games and drinking. People were like, well, I don't want to do anything else, so we just put Berserk on and just watch it. And I'm never going to say no to watching Berserk, despite how horrible that show is. horrible and just depressing sense, not in a bad entertainment sense, because it's a damn good show. But yeah, all in all, it was a good time. The road trip, I want to say on Sunday coming home, I spent like 12 hours on the road. Or not 12, yeah, about 12 hours. Not, maybe not 12.
I don't know if I could do a long haul like that anymore. I'll find out Because I'm doing that trip to visit Aleshon and see that band Gravity Kills in November.
You'll find out for sure if Gravity does truly kill.
Yeah, well, I hope not. Jesus. Cornell, are you wishing for my death on this vacation of mine?
I have nothing to do with you, dying.
I mean, someone has Gravity to. Kill.
Someone yeah, I mean, die.
He's not driving there by dropping his car out of an airplane. Like, he's going to drive on the ground, I think.
Honestly, if that was his goal, if he was going to tip that, I, for the sake of just experimentation, I'm like, well, yeah, go for it, buddy. Knock yourself out.
Yeah, he's going to jump the Springfield Gorge and then land at the Gravity Kills show on the other side. I'm going to say Gravity Fall.
That's a good show.
It's a very good show. That's something I would probably drive cross country to enjoy if it was a live show of that.
For now, how does it feel to have someone else making Simpsons references?
Oh, it feels great. I'm never going to complain about that. That was one of the perks of the road trip. Almost everybody in the car knew Simpsons, classic Simpsons. So we were just shotgunning those bad boys off like candy. You'd think Kurt Cobain was the driver. It was great. But that was funny enough. I had to make that because somebody made like three of those jokes over the week. I'm like, how in the hell are you pulling those out of your pocket like that? And why are you doing that? So now I felt compelled to do it too. Plus, I listened to On a Plane on the way back from the bar. So that was a good time too. But like, yo, I'm always going to say happy. I'm happy to have Simpsons referencers on the show or in life because, you know, you can always spot a good friend by if they're familiar with classic season 1 through 13 Simpsons. And yeah, I said 13. Big whoop. Want to fight about it?
That's two seasons more generous than me, so fair enough.
I think I admit I am far more generous when it comes to Simpsons evaluation than most. It's just the way it is, though. Just the way it is. Because I just think that the show had a lot of jokes that were still entertaining, even if it wasn't peak Simpsons throughout the entire thing, you know?
Yeah. I know. I don't really have, like, certain seasons that I prefer over others. I just, if it's on, I watch it and I laugh. That's all I need out of The Simpsons is laughter.
I mean, the show, they need to stop now just because what they're doing should be considered elder abuse. Like, Julie Kavner sounds like Tom Carvel. It sucks, dude.
Yeah, her Martin voice
is... She sounds like she's gargling hot asphalt. Like, something has to be done about it.
Yeah, I feel bad for that woman. She's like... Jesus Christ.
What would you do? Would you end the show? Or
she sounds like a Teddy Ruxpin with a melted battery. Like, it just...
I'd be fine with new voice actresses, too, but let's be real. Well, the thing about it is, like, I feel like if they did it right, they could easily make this show right. All they have to do, they'll never do it, but all they got to do is flash forward The Simpsons about 10, 15 years and then release another 25 seasons of The Simpsons and that phase of their lives. Because they have the content for it. They could write stories with a brand new, all these characters and different phases of their lives that they every once in a blue moon, they'll do that with like future tense episodes and stuff like that. But they could do that right now. They could just stop everything and say, you know, we're just going to have an episode where Bart and Lisa are just kind of putzing about doing whatever. Teenagers are going to high school dealing with stuff, or they're in college now and they have the plights of college, or they, you know, Homer and Marge return. I know you're going woof, but that's the thing. The show's been on so long. Technically, they should be doing this shit.
That's very like Pebbles and Bam Bam, like the young Flintstones or whatever it is.
Yeah, and yeah. Honestly, I was kind of cool with that. I mean, very you might say that copy. Maybe the Pebbles and Bam Bam show might not have been as good, per se, as the original Flintstones.
Isn't that the one where Captain Caveman came from, or am I just insane?
Yeah, I think you're a little insane, but not fully, because they did have Captain Caveman and Son, which aired during Flintstone Kids.
Yeah.
So that's what you're probably thinking about.
I remember
this stuff. But it's just,
yeah.
I'm just trying to figure out.
I wish I could find like just a treasure trove of like VCR tapes that were recorded from Saturday morning.
YouTube might have some of that. YouTube or archive.org might have some of that stuff you're looking for.
That'd be cool.
Archive, yeah. I'm sure, does. It has some weird shit on there.
I think my favorite is, and you can find this stuff more widely on YouTube now, but there was a time when you couldn't, and this guy who used to work for Kmart for like 10 or 15 years, kept all of the tapes of the music they would play in the store.
Oh, yes.
And archived them and then uploaded all of them to archive.org.
Wow.
I appreciate that person. I'm going to tell you something. There's something about store music that you would originally joke about it, but then if you've worked it long enough, you start to remember the entire rotation, and you will sing the songs. Not just sing them normally, you'll sing the transitions too. Like, it got really weird. You'll sing along with
the announced sales.
Yes, you do all of it. It becomes rote, and when they change it up, you start to notice it, and you start to miss commercials. It's weird, man.
You're waving a lighter in the air when they come to the bit about women's hosiery.
Like. Back to forth sway before cell phones. You're just like waving your lighter that you stole from the back room.
Which you also got there, which is also on sale.
No, we're not Katie Toy. No, we didn't sell lighters. We sold poker playing cards for children. Along with children's poker chips.
Where else
are kids going to learn to gamble? Come on.
Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, yeah. Captain Caveman is in the Flintstone Kids. He attended Pebbles and Bam Bam's wedding. I knew it. He has continuity in the Flintstones universe. No, I said... I said he was in the... he was in all that, and then somebody said
you
wasn't.
Asked if that's where he started.
Yeah, and I was like, no, Captain Caveman was a normal cartoon, like just a typical Hanna-Barbera cartoon. And then when Flintstone Kids came out, they introduced Captain Caveman and son, and they brought his son into the fold because they were on that whole the children of the main characters kick or the main characters as kids or whatever. But I will admit, I did not know that Captain Caveman came onto the show at some point in time as a character in the show. That I didn't know. Though it kind of does make sense because I might be off, but I want to say that I might have to look this up later, but I want to say Captain Caveman and Son was considered a television show for them to watch. But
something like that. Apparently so his first appearance was in the Captain Caveman and the Teen Angels, which I thought was later. But that's like his like first appearances.
So was he, hold on, let's backtrack a minute. Was he a guest at Pebbles and Bam Bam's wedding, or was he a member of the bridal or groom's party?
I have tabbed away from the...
pretty sure he was a guest.
Okay.
Well, he wasn't, like, apparently he didn't appear in the episode, he was just in the art for it. So,
either way, I feel like trusting him near an open bar is a mistake.
So that was probably like an Easter egg then, if you put it that way. Like, he was like, oh look, Captain Caveman's in the audience.
Yeah, but he was in the regular show, though. I mean, like, I'm just saying that, like...
It's an Easter egg when you open this, it's full of hair.
I'm saying, you're like, when you say he was in the...
If you're invited to the wedding, you know, you're somewhat important.
But when you say he's in the show, are you saying there is instances where Fred Flintstone was having a conversation with Captain Caveman?
I don't know about Fred. He was in the Flintstone comedy show. But he was in the teenage version, the Flintstone Kids. He was like actually in that show. Like he had a separate like he actually lives in Bedrock. Like he has an alter ego and stuff there. And I guess Wilma and Betty is his boss. That's what it says here. Man,
you're blowing my mind now because this shit I did not know.
he has an alter ego in Bedrock. Is that where he goes to like fuck women who aren't his wife?
He doesn't have
a wife, though. I guess
that's not established in the cartoon.
Does he have like a? He's got like a bachelor pad and a fake name.
He has like a child.
He has a child, and we don't know who the mom is. So,
witness protection program.
Maybe something. Yeah, maybe something to that.
Where the hell is this?
I don't think they're sending Captain Caveman to Tucson, Arizona. He's not in witness protection.
How was my weekend?
Yeah.
I worked on some music. That was basically it.
Basically.
And what else did I do? Oh, I watched a lot of Godzilla movies. I'm trying to get through all of them.
Nice.
I say get through because I'm in like the kids films portion of the oeuvre.
I remember Laugh Olympics. That takes me way back.
And the wacky.
Yeah, I remember seeing that too. I wonder if Captain Caveman was ever in a video game. I need to find that out.
Did he ever fight or assist Godzilla?
Well, I mean, Godzilla was a Hanna-Barbera property for a while, so it's possible.
I mean, they
might have mashed them together at some point. They probably put Godzilla with the three Robotnik Stooges at some point.
God, I hope so. I hope the Harlem Globetrotters had to help Godzilla solve a mystery.
That would be great. Yeah, I mean, that era of cartoons was just... It was just shapes and sounds. So, like, people making those cartoons would just do anything.
Three Stooges, all of whom are dead by the time this was made.
I think one of the Stooges... Well, the first Hanna-Barbera cartoon that came out with the Stooges, two of them were alive enough... two of the originals were alive enough to provide their voices, and then...
Oh, that's good.
I think Curly Joe did, maybe... But I know that Moe and Larry did. But by the time the Robotnik Stooges came out, they were probably all dead.
Well, then you just need their frozen brains to provide alpha wave patterns and voices for that. So,
yeah. Isn't that Futurama? Are we mixing our cartoons now?
Where do you think they got the idea?
Fair.
Anyway, the whole reason I was even talking about that is because I was just looking at Frank Welker's. You know, one of the most prominent cartoon voices in the entire world. And he's still working. He's 77 years old. He was the original voice of Fred in the Scooby-Doo.
I think he still does some Fred stuff some every once in a while.
He does. Sometimes he's Fred. Sometimes he's Scooby-Doo. He don't give a fuck. But he's doing stuff as of 2023. He is still working. So, I don't know. My whole point of it was that, like, for some reason, animation voice actors just go forever. They're voicing characters like on their deathbeds. So,
I mean, look at the DuckTales game.
Well, the Simpsons.
Alan Young went into his 90s.
Which ones are dying?
I don't know. Alan Young wasn't. Oh yeah, if you're talking about the Simpsons, I don't know. I haven't watched the Simpsons in 20 years, but 25 years actually. Yeah, like Alan Young, the voice of Scrooge McDuck, he voiced Scrooge McDuck. I think his last, no, it wasn't the video game, the Wii U game, but I think he did like one last Scrooge after that and then died, and he was like in his mid-90s at that point. Ironic, I guess, considering his name. Well, that just goes to show nominative determinism is frequently wrong.
Woo!
New show motto.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Outervention, where whatever term he just used is notoriously wrong.
Just giving me ideas for my own podcast.
Lord. Anyway, speaking of podcasts, we should probably get to business. We got a bunch of games to talk about.
Remember when this was a video game podcast?
Yeah, Once Upon a Dream. Should we dive into reviews? Y'all ready?
Yes.
Good.
All right, first game to talk about tonight is Gord, developed by Covenant.dev, published by Team 17, published by Team 17, released August 17th on Xbox Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $34.99. Gord is a single-player adventure strategy. To survive, you must build, but to prevail, you must conquer the darkness beyond the gates. In this dark fantasy world, you must complete quests while managing a populace whose personal stories and well-being decide the fate of your tribe. For now, what is going on in Gord?
I'm see if I'm, I can work that out, because I'm freaking Gord, man. So in this game, it's kind of like you said, you are tasked as a sort of like employee of the king of this world. And this king is a greedy bastard who is trying to conquer lands and acquire riches, you know, lies within these lands. One such land he wants to conquer exists within a very, very horrible forested area. And he tasks you with going, exploring, making a sort of connection with one of the local tribes within said region, and tracking back to like the location of like a really stupendous treasure and hoard of wealth that exists within that realm. Ill advised though, because this land that you are traversing is just miserable. Like, I mean, miserable. Every character in this game is miserable. It's just rough. And I'm not saying that as a slight on the game. I'm saying that's literally the world that they created for the game. For the most part, the way it works out is that the game takes place over a series of campaign levels. In which case, each campaign, the game prompts you with fulfilling a series of missions. So it's sort of narrative-based in what they want you to do. It progresses a story. But the general gameplay loop for this whole structure is you have to first create what is called a gourd, basically. Ha, the title of the game. Though they also refer to it as a palisade. In which case, you have to select a structure that is essentially a large... I guess like circular environment that you can stretch and pull the sides to an extent, and that determines how big it can be within reason. And of course, the larger you make it, the more wood resource it costs to build it. But once you've done that, now you can populate it with like people that are generally already with you. And these people have a variety of different starting skills they can have associated with different professions the game has, like, you know, lumberjack or hunter or spearmen or axemen or whatever. But once you've built this gourd or palisade up, you then have to populate that area with structures. Typical of a city building game where these structures will allow you to forge the land for resources, but you can use to construct other things. There's wood and reed, which, by the way, this is very well the first game I've ever heard of that utilizes reed as a resource. Reed is something that grows on the edge of ponds. And in this game, I assume you use it to bind wood together. The best way I can think of how to use it. There is clay, which you can use to fortify and enhance structures. There's food that you need to harvest either through foraging for mushrooms or by hunting. And that's used to keep your tribe, you know, alive and not, you know, nipping each other's heels and sane. And then aside from that, there's one other resource, which I'll get to shortly. So once you establish some structures, which, by the way, you are fairly limited to building your structures inside the gourd, which means that unlike a lot of other city building type games where you're expecting to just kind of grow and expand outward, in this game, you are limited by that space. You might find yourself destroying structures and rebuilding other structures depending on the needs that arise for you. Also, your populace does grow, but it's not at a massive rate. Your populace can have children, and then those children can grow into adults, which is kind of funny when you think about it, because this is all happening at a very rapid pace. I mean, the game will say, you just had a kid, and you go back to the game screen, and the child is running around town. Like, that had to be very painful to birth. But basically, you know, your populace will start out as one structure, and they can grow and expand as time passes within the gourd. Unfortunately, though, eventually you have to leave the structure and venture out into the wild. And that's when all hell breaks loose because it is miserable out there. You have freaking borderline eldritch creatures roaming the woods attacking people. You have regular animals like wolves and boar that will attack your people. And then you have freaking super monsters where if you come across them, you are allowed to fight them, but it is ill-advised. And instead, you will more likely have to succumb to their whims in order to allow them to bypass them or let them leave you alone and not infect your village with the fucking plague the plague. Please bleep that.
No.
Buddy, heck, there goes my professionalism. So
you're on our show. There is no professional.
Hey, I bring it in. You'll be dealing with this. Now, the thing that ends up happening with this, like I said, the monsters will eventually attack you out in the woods. And when that happens, combat has to ensue. You don't really choose the combat, though. If there are people around animals, they will fight. And combat will be hopefully less painful than it could be. But let's be real, it's going to be painful. When you win a combat, you don't really get anything. And if you do, I haven't noticed it yet. Maybe there's some combat experience that I haven't noticed or anything. But what I do know happens is that even though the threat is alleviated, your sanity will take a hit because people dealing with horrors in the wild does not sit well with them. It does not cater well to their whims. And while there are ways to try to help them deal with that sanity loss, and other ways in which to lose sanity is also just literally roaming in the dark. If you're out in the dark, you lose your sanity. You witness death, you lose your sanity, and so on and so forth. And if your sanity takes too much of a dive, the person will have a freaking panic attack and just like, bolt, leave your tribe entirely. Which is kind of dumb because they will die in the wild anyway, so Seems like insane. I don't even know. Seems like insanity did not work too well for them to make any rational choices. Who'd have thought, right? You are managing all this, and I will tell you, there's something to be said about this game where, like, on the surface, I think it's pretty cool. In execution, though, there are more than a few times where it just maddens me to the point where I don't know how I feel about it. For example, the micromanagement in this game is absurdly dense. So I've played games where you have to deal with people and making sure certain people level up and grow as a civilian or whatever. But in this game, there's something off about it where, like, every citizen has individual traits that could help or hinder their progress. Like, you might get a person that's, like, better at chopping wood, 10% better at chopping wood than another person. But due to the nature of how, you know, just this game is built, limited resources, limited structures and the like, good luck trying to manage who has what perks and what jobs they can do. You're just going to say, hey, I need some hunters right now. Get in the damn hut. You're a hunter now. Oh, we need some wood. Get in that hut. You're a lumberjack now. Oh, man, we got some freaking wild folk coming our way. Get some axe wielders now. That child, yeah, he can't pick up an axe, but he can run around with his dad, who does have an axe, and give him extra experience. So there you go with that shoot. Get out there and fight. And then when all this stuff happens, you have, like, other weird aspects that drive you freaking crazy. Like, so you expect when you give a person a job that they pretty much do it. Like, from what I can tell, and if I'm wrong about this, someone can let me know. Please do, because I haven't come across it. Usually, if you build a hut for the job and you put a person in it, they take on the job. And they start run off and doing whatever they want to do. But I've had moments where people just aren't doing anything. They'll just stop moving. Like, there's nothing to do. So I'll have to select that person individually, drag them back to the shack, to the same job, and now they start doing something. Why they stop working, I have no idea. And there's been more than a few cases in this game. It happens a lot where I'll be like, okay, this guy's doing a job. I can move on and think about something else. Next thing I know, the guy not only stopped working, but he stopped working in the dark woods. And now he's getting his ass beat by wild boar. When the guy goes, your teammate's under attack. I'm like, they shouldn't be. He should be in the goddamn gourd where I sent him. Why is he not working or sitting in the gourd? Why did he stop in the woods to get his ass beat? I don't understand. But like, and you're sitting here trying to tug all pull all these people in a line, keep them in order, when you kind of just don't want to. You want them to just be efficient, to just do their jobs. And then the interface can be annoying too. Now, keep in mind, I'm saying all this knowing that they can work on this, they can change this stuff. These are all things that can be tweaked in the back end for a patch or something. But the other thing is that some of the UI drives me a little crazy too. Just flipping equipment items from character to character. Or even something as dumb as selecting what people you want to select from your initial loadout when you pick a scenario. It's just, there's a lot of interface change where I'm like, this is weirder than it needs to be. It feels more cumbersome than it needs to be. So much so that it has me questioning my age. It has me wondering if I'm too old to be playing video games now. Am I over the hill because Gorge UI is driving me crazy? Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I tell people I'm 52 all the freaking time. I guess that's about the time they believe it too. But it's just strange, you know? Like, I like the premise of the game.
Overall, a strange game.
Oh, it is a strange game. There's no denying that. Like, there are people who, I have no doubt, no matter how I feel about this game, this is right up their alley. Like, oh man, I'm sacrificing children to eldritch beasts in the woods? Aki, it's like, hey, sign me up. I'm in. But honestly, I don't even have a problem with that. I mean, I'm perfectly fine with grim dark games. You know that. I'll play some rough shit. But there it goes. There's my professionalism again. But
professionalism. You're so weird.
but it wasn't the grim dark, and it wasn't the, I even mentioned the faith. I forgot about that. There's a freaking character you meet at a certain point in the game, and once you meet her, you start dealing in the aspect of faith too, where you can build shrines in your hut or your gourd and have people pray to the shrine to build up faith, and you can spend the faith like currency to cast spells. It's an interesting concept there too. But yeah, it's just, but it seems like the main flaws I have with this game are just like the AI for the characters, them just not doing their jobs, just stopping intermittently when I have them doing a task. As usual, the freaking screen font is just binky tiny for the screen real estate. Like, how hard is it? And I'm saying this both for this game and just so many other games like this. How hard is it to take a game that you develop for PC, knowing you're going to port it to consoles, and just give the players an option to just like magnify the border menus? Just magnify the text. Just expand it enough so that it can make sense on a big TV as opposed to a freaking 15 or 20 inch monitor that your face is pressed up against. People are using 55, 70 inch TVs from across their living rooms now to play video games. Make the text comparable in size. That's all I ask. I don't believe that's me being old. I think that's just how it is.
Yeah, there's too many games with small text, and every time a game comes out and it has a UI scale in it, and you could put it from like 100% to like 300%, I crank that baby all the way up. I want to see what I'm doing.
Yeah, and damn, I feel straight. I feel like that can't be that hard to do. Like, I'm not a coder, at least not a UI coder or anything like that. But I can't imagine that being that hard to implement. It just scales out. But if it is, please tell me as well. I will genuinely take you at your word. But as an outsider looking in on how complex coding is and creating a game is, I feel like the UI scaling the size would have to be probably one of the easiest things you could do compared to all the other hard tasks that go into creating a video game.
Next week on the show, we're going to deal with an angry email saying how UI work is incredibly difficult and you're a son of a bitch for question. No.
If that's what they send, I respect that. I'm just saying they'd be doing the service of the video game community and lore at large, because I know I'm not the only person that has that complaint, and I know I'm not the only person that's had that complaint about other games than this one too. Like, it just feels like they make this setup and it's like, oh right, this works great on my 20 inch monitor, beautiful game, and then it's like, okay, now time to port to Xbox, PC, PS5, or Steam, or it's already PC, but you know what I mean, Xbox, PS5, Switch, and all that, and you're like, okay, well, are we going to make any changes to make it better for the console? No, we're going to port it. They'll like it.
Well, this launched on everything at the same time, on Xbox, PS5, and PC. It is $35. What are your thoughts on it?
I'm not going to give it a deny it, because there is some stuff to like here. It's not like a bad game per se, but please take everything I said to heart in regards to like the extreme micromanagement and the like. I'm gonna give it a try in that aspect. If you're okay with micromanagement out the freaking wazoo and people losing their pathways every once in a while, then everything else this game has to offer will be up your alley. But if you can't deal with that kind of stuff, back away, disco lady, because this ain't for you.
All right, moving on. Next game is Alterium Shift, developed by Dratzy Games, published by Gravity Game Arise, released July 6th on Steam for $19.99. Embark on a journey through the living world of Alteria and experience its dynamic quests, unique turn-based combat, and choice-driven storylines. With three branching narratives and unforgettable characters, Alterium Shift is a retro-inspired JRPG that offers a new adventure with every playthrough. Aki and Chris, you both checked this out. Who wants to go first?
I can go first.
Aki, wait, can you hear me? That?
Yeah.
Okay,
I'm Chris? Always fine with other people to do work.
Okay.
All right, Chris, tell us, what is Alterium Shift?
Okay, well, Alterium Shift. Well, just in time for Sea of Stars to have come out and, become everybody's, next Chrono Trigger, whatever. Which is, by the way, a phrase I'm starting to get tired of. This game comes out and also, like, is a JRPG that has some similarities and stuff. So, yeah, Alterium Shift is a, I guess you could call it a 2.5D JRPG adventure. This one features three different characters who are students, basically learning how to become big important folks. Like, the big important guy who is training them was in the Dark Elf Wars, as it goes. You get to choose from these three characters at the beginning of the game. You can be the lady with the spear and the fire element. You can be a guy who has a bow and the wind element, or you can be a non-binary magic caster who is a lazy prick.
Yeah, Sage sucks.
Yeah, we hate Sage. Do what?
I was like, why you gotta be like that about Sage?
Oh, well, it's a character that's meant to be kind of infuriating, right?
Yeah, but anyways, Sage is a cunt muffin on purpose.
Yeah. So, once you pick your character, then you basically, you have your choice. You can, spend some time in the idyllic opening village, receiving side quests and training outside and, like, you know, eventually taking a test with your teacher, perchance to fail it. This is one of the only games I've ever seen where the lore dump of the game, which is given via library, actually has a written test that you can fail.
Wow.
So, yeah,
you can also ace it.
You can also ace it. Yeah, I've done both.
I've never failed it. I don't understand how you fail it.
If you don't realize that it's not mandatory, but if you don't realize that what it is and you just kind of skip over, you don't read any of the library stuff and they spring it on you, then you can fail it. But yeah, it's like five questions and it's pretty easy. Anyways, yeah, the other thing is I failed the physical exam at first because I didn't realize how tough it was going to be. And then I found out something interesting about it is that it's unwinnable. You just have to last long enough to get. And that's the thing
It is technically winnable. The game isn't made for it to be winnable, but if you get to high enough level, you can beat him.
Interesting.
Wow, you did it.
It breaks the game. No, I did not, but I read people who had. They got to like level 12. I got to like level 8. Before doing it, and it breaks the game if you do that.
Really? Because what happens?
Like, what happens?
Well, I got to level like something, and after like about 11 or 12 moves, he hits you once for 99,999 damage, and the fight's over.
Mm. Yeah. After turn 10, he does an instant kill attack.
Yeah.
If you can kill him before then, which is incredibly difficult.
I see. Okay.
You actually just get basically locked in because it says you survived zero rounds and it just doesn't continue from that point. It literally just breaks the game.
Wow.
And we can talk about the game getting broken in a bit because
we can.
Anyways, so yeah, you take your tests and then you join your teacher on a very important quest that you don't get to really know about. And after a pretty cool boss fight, you get sucked into a portal and you end up in another world. And here's the cool thing. If you start a new game, let's say with one of the other two characters, because they actually have three different storylines. Well, like a lot of the same events happen, but they kind of you see that through a different perspective. And, you know, you get to know that character much better than the other two. But anyways, if you start a new game and you tell the game, oh, I know how to play already, they're like, oh, do you just want to start off in this forest then? Like where you after you fight the first boss and you're like, oh, yeah, sure. I don't know if it's after you fight the first boss or right before, but it asks if you just want to skip like the whole first part of it and just, you know, start off the adventure proper. And I think that's kind of cool. Like, imagine if, you know, if you start Chrono Trigger and it's like, you just want to start in 600 AD? you're like,
I guess. Then you get to miss all the farming you get to do to get to an obscene level before you actually start doing anything.
I mean, yeah, that's your playstyle.
That is very. Right now I'm a level like 43 and I'm in the second area and I think you're supposed to be like in the early teens at that point.
If even.
Wow, Aki.
Well, this is the kind of game
you've been doing in the game.
Killing things in like two hits. Killing everything in two hits with basic starter gear.
Which is your character?
I picked Pyrrha.
That's interesting. I picked Pyrrha, but everything dies in one hit because I have a AoE attack.
Oh, I'm not talking about special abilities. I'm talking about basic. Just click the attack button and everything dies in two hits. It doesn't matter.
Right on.
Well, other than bosses. Bosses usually take like four.
It's okay, ridiculous. So you overleveled. What else did you do?
Basically everything that Chris did, and then a little bit extra. I don't want to give too much away, but you end up going in and out of this alternate world, as Chris called it. It is the land of the Dark Elves. The two places were somehow split away from each other, or maybe always were. I haven't gotten far enough to know which is the case yet. But basically in the past there was a war between the humans and the Dark Elves, and humans won and locked them away, basically. And you get to freely travel between the two worlds and bring everyone in your crew with you. You get crew members at more or less at random. You get some, and I feel like you can even say no to some of them being part of your group, which is pretty cool. Obviously, eventually you have all three of the main characters in your group for some period of time. You also get some little side characters that show up. For instance, one of the first ones I found was this hermit who... really isn't great. They're an alchemist, and I refuse to use any of their special abilities because I don't like using special abilities, and they can't hit things very hard. there are also puzzles in the game. I found one major one that is linked to actually continuing forward in the game that is all, like, you have to figure out how to raise and lower water levels throughout like three or four floors of this building to get things unlocked, and that took me like a half hour or so because one part of it got real fucking confusing. I've really enjoyed my time with this. There's been a few issues with the game where it just stops working just all together, and I have to close it, hard close it, and then restart playing it.
Oh, jeez.
So, yeah, one of the big ones I found was in basically the second time you enter the Dark Elf area, you get to visit a giant fuck-off-sized desert, and there's an area where a giant monster is, and also a bunch of small monsters. If you go near small monsters, they'll chase you. But when you hit areas that are like a story area, it kind of stops you from moving. And then if the small creature hits you before whatever happens, it fucks the entire game up.
Are we on bugs already?
Yes. Nice. We're on bugs already because I just hit bug after bug after bug with this game.
Yeah.
And basically, I had this wolf chasing after me, and I hit an area where this giant worm was supposed to come out. And so it put me in the fight with the wolf twice, and then it just black screened me and wouldn't do anything. So I had to close out of the game and redo all of that. Thankfully, the autosaves are pretty frequent.
Yeah, they're generous.
Yeah, it's extremely generous. Like, any time you enter or exit an area... Hold on. Sneeze. Sorry about that.
Go ahead.
Basically, anytime you enter or exit an area, it saves, auto saves for you. So you're not going to lose much, thankfully. I think the most I lost was like a handful of minutes, and that was it. It's pretty nice with the auto saves. There's a lot of points where, you know, something's chasing you and you get pulled into something else, and it just breaks the game utterly and completely. Or sometimes you'll enter a room, maybe, I guess, before you were supposed to or something, and it breaks the game. Or you use an ability that maybe you weren't supposed to, and oh, it breaks the game. Or you try and sell something that you have a bunch of, but it's all, one or two of them's equipped to other characters, and yeah, then it breaks the game.
Trying to sell stuff that is identical to something you have equipped
Will no good. Don't do that.
At best, it will de-equip it from your character, even if you're only selling the one that's not equipped.
Yeah, and if it does that, it's really hard to get it re-equipped because the game has to reload everything that it thinks you have to try and figure out what can even be equipped in that slot because you didn't unequip it properly.
Right.
And other times it just freezes the game and you have to, you know, hard quit out of it again. This game is a fucking clusterfuck.
Were all these bugs enough for you to hard quit the game for good? It's $20. What are your verdicts?
Well, I was going to go into... Yeah, I was just going to say I was going to want to go into like some other stuff I liked, such as, like I said, it's... Well, the game's beautiful. It looks amazing. It's got two really, really good, well-animated sprites on a 3D polygonal field. It looks like Octopath Traveler, but without the Vaseline smear, which is kind of nice. So,
oh,
and
there's one thing I really like.
Without the
like
bloom lighting either. Go
that's
ahead.
That's tied to that. When you hit boss fights, it'll go from 2D and then the whole plane will turn on almost every boss fight. So you'll be walking sideways and then the whole arena that you're in shifts and you get to see this big boss even better and it puts you at a different 2D plane and it is so cool.
Yeah, because you can't freely rotate the map or anything. So it's like, yeah, it's kind of cool that they will cinematically rotate it for you. And I like that some of the bosses are polygonal, which is kind of cool. Like you hardly ever see polygon bosses with sprite characters. And they're like low poly. So like they've got like nice textures and stuff, but they kind of look like they're just folded out of really nice paper.
Yeah.
But it's actually cool looking. I also really love the music. I will say I needed to play the game muted at a certain point. And so in the outer menu, I turned off the sound and then I played my game and it just ignored that and the sound was all the way up. And so I like opened up the menu and it said the sound was at 0. So I like put it up to 1 and then back down to 0 and that managed to mute it.
Yeah, it sound
sometimes the game will ignore things. Yeah. and then like what was the other thing? Oh yeah, I completed a side quest and the game just forgot. It just, you know, all the characters told me I completed the side quest, but the paper was still on the bulletin board and I was like, God damn it.
Uh-huh.
Anyway,
and you can't
having
redo
said
it.
No, you can't do anything about it. But having said, like, despite the bugs, the aesthetics are cool. I really like the writing. The characters are really cool. The battle system, I don't know where they get off calling it unique. It's literally, it's I hit you, you hit me back. It's literally that. There's not a turn order. There's not,
a turn order. It's up at the top of the screen.
Well, yeah. I just mean, like how some RPGs do it, you know? But I mean, maybe that's what it is. But anyways, it is very simple. Let's just call it that. There's nothing like truly special about it, but it's fun. It's also got a fishing mini game that isn't broken somehow.
Yeah, it actually works really well, and I just don't understand.
Yeah. So I just wanted to say there's a lot going for this game. And so for $20, I'm actually giving this a buy it, and I will be buying it when it comes out on Switch, because I am not going to play this on Steam anymore. This is the last straw for me. It has controller support, except you can't access the menu. You have to press the escape key to use items, equip your characters, run the config, save your game. You have to touch your keyboard.
What controller do you have?
I have a Astro C40 that Steam reads as a Xbox controller.
Hit triangle then.
It doesn't work.
Y, whatever. Oh, that doesn't work for you? Weird.
Doesn't work for me. Yeah.
It works online. Mine's an app play.
And there's no controller config either, except in Steam proper. So, you know, there's not really a way to fix that. But yeah, no, I'm pushing it right now. It's not doing anything.
Weird, because it opens it for me on mine. Mine's
And that's the thing. That's why I don't like to review games on Steam, is because nothing ever works. Like, fucking computers.
I'm so terrified now because I have this on Steam Deck, but I haven't booted it up yet. Surprise. Yeah,
I mean,
it'll
probably work fine. I don't know. But I mean, this, they do have lots and lots of patches, reading the Steam page on it. I'm hoping that they get
more.
And it's a small dev team. I hope that they get this stuff fixed in time for this to come out on consoles, because I'm absolutely riveted to revisit this game. And I actually think, despite the issues, that folks should buy this and check it out, because, you know, nothing is, it's not impossible to play. It's just, it's one of those things where you do kind of have to learn to work with some bugs.
You know, usually I'm against games that are fucking hot messes, but I've actually thoroughly enjoyed my time with this, so I also think it's a buy it. I've really liked this, and as much of a clusterfuck as this game is, it is fantastic.
That's kind of great. I really like it. Aki and I both agree on this, and that we've spent more than half of the review trashing the bugs. But like,
oh yeah,
they,
the bugs are just stupid. But
but yeah, this game rises above that
for
sure. Yeah.
Yeah, because like, anytime you hit any of these bugs, you just hard quit the game, restart it, and you lose like maybe a minute or two of progress, and that's it. So it's like, I don't even particularly care. Yeah, the bugs can be kind of irritating, but I don't really lose anything, so the fuck do I care? And you can save anywhere, so, you know, I've gotten to the point where I'm like, there might be something buggy here. I just
almost
quick save.
Almost anywhere. There was a the part of the story where your character and the teacher are going to see the portal for the first time. You actually can't save it for a while.
You also can't save it during the test either. But generally, yeah, for the majority of the game, you can save anywhere.
Yeah. So there you go.
All right. Moving on, next game is Die After Sunset, developed by PlayStark, published by P-Cube, released August 17th on Series X and S, Switch, PS5, and PC for $19.99. Action-packed roguelike shooter stacked with hundreds of items, unique quests, monstrous bosses, unique, and hordes of enemies. Choose from three unique characters, complete quests, and level unique up after every run. That's right, two uniques in the intro. Purnell, what is going on in Die After Sunset?
Okay, so Die After Sunset is a game that takes place in a world where these little aliens called like Murkers have like kind of come down and invaded the Earth, and it initiates a massive battle for humanity's survival. And one particular individual, in the process of one of the final stands, ends up getting killed. But as she's dying, she actually ends up back in her apartment under mysterious circumstances, and she is tasked through this situation with being told, okay, you have another shot at this. Almost like, think like live, die, repeat or whatever, where she's pretty much left to say, okay, you have another chance. You can make things right. If you can stop the Murkers in like individual periods in time in history before they became too powerful, we may have a chance of stopping them. And therefore, the gameplay loop is you going to different locations. Those are the stages, by the way. Different locations at different points in time and battling the Murker in those locations to prevent them from ever gaining power. Now, on the surface, you might feel like I did when I saw this game. It's like, wow, this is a really colorful game, vibrant atmosphere. Sign me up. I want a piece of that pie. And honestly, even early on, I kind of felt that way too, because I do like the world. I like the graphics they set up for it. I like the concept of what they're working with here. But very quickly after I started playing the game, I started to notice a few things that just made me, you know, question what was going on with this game and what my takeaway on it would be. So before I go into that any deeper, what I'll do is I'll describe what the gameplay flow is. So this is a third-person shooter, and each level consists of you, the main character, being dumped into the middle of an island. A clock is ticking at the top left of the screen, with the idea being that when that clock runs out, one of the bosses of the Murker army is going to spawn on the map, and then you have to find where they spawned at and defeat them. So what are you supposed to do with the time while you're waiting for the clock to trickle down? Well, run around and get strong. You find yourself surrounded by enemies that maybe will spawn at any time. There's no rhyme or reason for it. They'll just pop up sometimes. And when they do, you want to kill them. They come in a variety of different types. But the thing that makes them special in this game is that, similar to an old classic called Eternal Sonata, which was an interesting little RPG, enemies in this game have one form that they take when they're in the light, and then when they run into a shadow or into a cave or in the dark, they take on another stronger form. So you want to battle them outside or within lit up areas. The moment they go into the dark for any reason, they will become more powerful and more frustrating for you, the player. As you're running around, you're going to be hopefully, you know, defeating these guys and collecting their delicious Murkrow essence, which can be used to upgrade yourself in between runs. But in addition to that, you'll also come across different treasure chests, which upon opening them, using either light as currency or defeating enemies within the area until they unlock, you'll get occasional upgrades for your character in the form of different items, sometimes different guns. But as this is also taking place, every once in a while you'll get a mission that pops up in the left corner of the screen. It'll say something like, the crane is out of control, or rest save the museum. And the top part of your screen has one of those like radars where you can follow it to figure out where the location is, which I will tell you right off the bat, that will annoy the crap out of you for a while. It takes a little while to get used to how to understand how that thing works, despite having done it in multiple other games before this. And you'll find yourself just looking for purple or pink glitchy light rising to the sky, because that's where an event unlocks when that occurs. When you get to the event, you have to do a thing. And when it's done, if you've done it well enough, you'll get a treasure chest and a rating of 1 to 3 stars. I'll explain the thing in a minute, by the way. But depending on how well you deal with those stars, that will determine what sort of rewards lie in the chest. You can get an upgrade to your attack power, your defensive power, or your light. Light being a currency that can be picked up from destroyable objects or for defeating some enemies, which becomes something you can use to unlock more chests or to throw light grenades, which will kind of damage enemies and brighten their day. Ha ha ha. What I meant by the thing, by the way, is that each mission has a different objective depending on the mission you take on. The annoying thing about this is that sometimes the mission is pretty freaking obvious and clear as day what you want you to do. Other times, it is not. And you'll find yourself being told, there's a pirate ship being looted. And you're like, okay, well, I'm at the pirate ship, and now the 3-star rating ticker is going down. You're like, what am I supposed to do here? Because it doesn't tell you anything once you're there. It just starts the mission, and you have to hope it's the sort of mission where you can kind of suss out the overall goal for the level and figure it out. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. Once the clock hits 0, the boss will spawn on the map. You get about 3 minutes to locate them on the map. And once you get to them, the boss battle will start. If you can defeat the boss, you'll get a volley of rewards, and you'll be teleported to the next stage and continue your journey. In the event that you die, however, you will get the opportunity to either just do a quick restart or go back to the main hub to inspect your, I guess, successes or wares. You can spend Murkrow goo in the quote-unquote shop area to either upgrade your default stats in the form of, like I said, health, light, shield, or attack power. You can use it to unlock different items that will show up in future runs. And you can use it to unlock just general player perks, which can be equipped on characters once you've unlocked them. Even in addition to that, something you might like is that the achievements / trophies in this game are linked to unlockables too. And there's like an actual quote-unquote quest screen that lists what those things are. Uh-huh. If you fulfill the mission, you'll get a reward that's being used for like upgrading your character or to equip your character with as their base loadout, depending. There are 3 characters in the game total, one of which is an unlockable, and they play fairly similarly because even though their default weapons are unique, the upgrades and stuff that they can get during the levels themselves are the same. So also, their starting stats are slightly different from each other, too. Now, the weird thing about this, though, is that as I describe this, I'm kind of sad, because this seems like the sort of game that I should be gushing about right now. I should be really into it. Again, I was looking forward to this game well before it got announced on consoles. I was looking at it when it was originally a preview game on Steam. But something about it in execution just doesn't quite sit well with me. As I play it, I find myself doing the levels, and I don't feel like there's a ton of structure. The items don't seem all that particularly interesting to me. Like, a lot of the upgrades you get feel minor to the point of, like, not being concerned about them. Parallel that with something that, while I know is not a one-to-one genre, like Enter the Gungeon, every item in that game, despite there being a ton of them, feels cool to pick up. You're like, wow, that upgrade's going to be nice. It's going to alter my run. It's going to make my run feel different.
You know what else is nice?
Subs.
Indeed. Raider Biz coming by, dropping a sub for the 17th month. Raider, always good seeing you hanging out. You're here for the show this time. It's not music yet. But,
never met him, but I like you.
Die After Sunset is clocking in at $20. What are your thoughts on it?
I feel weird saying this because of what I described earlier, but this may well be a deny for me. Like, it hits all the visual notes, but as I play the game, and as I described earlier, nothing about it, just nothing makes me want to keep coming back. It makes me feel like I wish this game just offered more to make me want to keep coming back to the vibrant world they created for me to run around and play in.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't quite hit it.
Ah, well, we got to move on. Next game is Stray Gods, the role-playing musical, developed by Summerfall Studios, published by Humble Games, released August 10th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $29.99. God's Romance Murder Musical Numbers. Play as Grace in a world
fucking
where two gods live in hiding among us. Change your fate as you draw friends, foes, and lovers into song using your powers of musical persuasion to unravel the mystery of the last muse's death. And a big shout out to Shih Tzu on you for resubbing for the 8th month. Big thank you. Always love seeing you in chat. Dave, you played Stray Gods. Tell us what's going on in this game.
I would be happy to. And just in case we've picked up any new listeners in the past couple of minutes, welcome, fellow travelers of the left-hand path to the world of Spirit Cook. Stray Gods is a visual novel written as a three-act musical. Player agency is established through dialogue choices and the selection of a specific character path. You can be either clever, charming, or aggressive, and you choose that in the first act. Also, there are songs, as noted earlier. Exposition, lore, and character conflicts are portrayed through song, and some of them, the songs I mean, have time choices for the player to decide which verse to sing, which alters the dialogue and subsequent interactions. In Stray Gods, you play as Grace, who is a college dropout and musician who very quickly learns the following. The Greek pantheon of gods is real. They live in America. Grace is one of them, and she is also on trial for murder. More specifically, Grace befriends the muse Calliope, not knowing that she is in fact a muse in the Greek sense. Calliope is promptly murdered and passes on her god powers to Grace as she dies. The other gods think Grace killed her and give her a week to prove her innocence. The game from then on is solving a mystery of sorts, I guess, and dealing with the other gods who are mostly weird and annoying, as one should expect from Greek mythology. Many of these characters are voiced by people from The Last of Us, I found out, and Felicia Day is in this game. So the voice acting is really good, and that is a common failing of games like this, and really most video games, I find. So it is worth pointing out that the voice acting in this game is really good and done by people who know what they're doing. I will also say the character design, it's all sort of, it looks hand-drawn, but like really well done. Almost like, I don't want to say comic book style, but like graphic novel style is how I'll say the game looks. The character design is really good. It is very diverse, which I think is fitting for a game like this. Overall, the visuals are great. It looks slicker than Owl Shit. Like, this game looks really, really good. Sorry,
it's got a horrible. It's got a great style to it. The only thing I don't like is the one dude in the game reminds me way too much of the dude from Nickelback.
Ugh.
Look at this phone.
I know which guy you mean, and that. There's some wisdom to that. which actually, you've just handed me a very handy segue. The musical element in this game, I will say, is a bit gimmicky. Which, I mean, I feel like we should kind of expect that.
Drop it!
The songs are a little repetitive. They all kind of sound the same. They're all a bit... well, the best way to put it is they're a bit Catholic. Like, they're a bit, like... They're downers, you know,
No when one
there's downers,
crazy.
You need an upper. Like Raider Biz dropping 100 biddies in chat. Thank you so much, Raider Biz. That is the upper we need to get through the downers of the musical numbers, I guess.
Jesus, man. You picked that up before it hit the ground. Nicely done. If I wasn't higher than giraffe pussy right now, I'd probably have like a funnier response to that. It's probably the best I can manage. Anyway, we were talking about fucking video games. So, Stray Gods does, in fact, have musical numbers. Again, the songs, they're a little on the downer side. They all kind of sound the same, which I understand, because, you know, it's a video game. There's a lot of stuff that is choice dependent. So it makes sense where they would want to have this as an element in the game, but not create like a shit ton of extra work for themselves. Like for the utility purposes, I understand it.
Yeah. Something that doesn't make sense is dropping even more bits in chat. And Raider Biz just dropped another 100. So thank you again, Raider Biz.
Fantastic.
Gotta find speaking a way to incorporate them all the time.
Speaking of slicker than Al shit, fucking Joe and picking up all these drops. Slicker than cum on a gold tooth.
I can't get over higher than giraffe pussy. I don't know what the publisher or the developers are gonna think if they hear this. They listen to that, but it made me laugh.
Well, to them, because they will listen to this eventually, I am sorry. I have horrible arthritis, and to blunt the effects of such in a punny way, I suppose, I ingested a marijuana or weed-style edible before taking to the microphone this evening.
Devil's lettuce.
It's true. I have ingested the jazz cabbage in the form of a delicious high CBD edible. So I actually have full range of motion in my shoulders and neck, which Ooh. is a rare and beautiful
thing.
That sounds
fun. That really does sound fun. Have
you can also
mobility and motion. Oh,
you can also tell that I'm high because I'm super easily distracted. The game, goddammit. We're here to talk about that. So yeah, back to the songs for like the third fucking time, I feel like. So this game runs into an issue that a lot of musicals run into that's not just limited to this game, where the songs don't really do enough to replace competently written dialogue, which there's a lot of in this game. They don't do quite enough heavy lifting, I don't think. But I also understand, like, I get why they decided to do a musical. Like, it's certainly unique. It's unique. A good hook. It's a good hook for the game. I had to. And it is a good hook for the game because, like, there's just so many visual novel style games out there already. You have to try and stand apart. So I totally get why they made the choice. And I think they pull it off better than most video games would. Because, like, what makes musical theater good really strains at the creative parameters of video gaming in general. It's not really a good one-to-one transfer from one to the other. So their reach kind of exceeds their grasp in this case. But I like that kind of ambition in video gaming, and I think more people should have it. I wish the songs stood out more. Like, if you have three character paths in the game, right? So if, like, one character path song sounded a certain way, and then the second character path songs all sounded like a different kind of way, and so on and so forth. Or even if there was, like, if they just went crazy Broadway style, I think that would be enough.
It's a hell of a tune.
Exactly, to sate my appetite for novelty. But they don't quite get there. But it's an interesting idea. And if you like musical theater, you're probably going to love this game. And luckily, there's other stuff beyond the main hook of the game to recommend it. So overall, I think they did a pretty good job.
Cool. Well, the game clocks in at $30. What are your thoughts on it?
30 is a little steep. I hate saying that after I just said what a good job they did. That's a bit of a whiplash. But I'll say this. If you really like musical theater, like if you are a highly annoying theater kid type of gamer, buy this game at $30. You will love it. It was made for you. It was made specifically with you in mind. Literally anyone else, wait for a sale. But that said, when this game does eventually come up on sale, as all games inevitably do, give it a chance. I think you'll like it.
Cool. Sounds good. All right. Well, Dave, that is it for you. Were you going to stick around while you were baked out of your mind, or were you going to head out while you were baked out of your mind?
I am probably going to be asleep in like 15 minutes. I also have really, really bad dry mouth at the moment. So continuing to talk and likely like cough and hack into a microphone is probably not like a great idea.
I just took the idiot from Nickelback and put his face on a screenshot from this game. I'm going to use that for the YouTube image.
You should. You really should.
The best part is I did a Google search for idiot from Nickelback, and it was like, Chad Kroeger, we know who you mean.
Yeah. So, fantastic.
Who else could it be?
Any of the other members, I guess. I don't know if they're idiots or not. So.
The bass player is. He's also a Kroeger. There's like three brothers in that band.
Really?
Yeah.
So like being a Nickelback is... Are you saying that being a Nickelback is an inherited genetic trait, like being a werewolf?
Yeah.
Goddamn.
Hey, Brooke.
That's rough. I can
confirm. Hey, Brooke. How are you doing?
Hi.
Whoa, what up? I just got out of my work thing. Just thought I'd pop on. I saw y'all are still going. Don't mind me.
You just missed my rambling mess of a video game review.
Yo, welcome to SML, baby.
That's what we do. We ramble.
That is what we do.
That's true. So hopefully the publishers have a healthy sense of humor.
Hope so. Fingers crossed. Hopefully. But Dave, we'll let you get going so you can enjoy the rest of your night. Thank you as always for coming on and chatting with us. Do you have any final words?
I am higher than giraffe pussy. And I'm going to bed.
Amazing. That is the most random shit I have heard in a while.
I believe he's quoting.
That's
from a thing? Someone already did that?
That's from some rap. I can't remember.
There's a bunch of different variations on it.
Yeah.
Multiple rappers have referenced giraffe pussy. Hey, who'd have thought?
Absolutely.
It's just the thing they'd reference.
It's the cool thing. It used to be like liquor, and it used to be women. Now it's just giraffes,
Giraffes, specifically. Good Lord, what has become of us?
Yeah, we gotta move on. Dave, we will let you get going. You have yourself a good one.
All right. Good night, everyone. I ruined the show.
Good night. Good night.
Have a good night, man.
I see how it is. I come on and he leaves. It's fine.
Well, how are you doing, Brooke?
I'm good, actually. I'll tell you guys the story next week, but I bombed the AMP bingo session, and I'm deeply traumatized by messing up bingo really bad AM. But I just got out of the PM session that we do for Australia and APAC, and I rocked it. And I rocked it so hard that I'm happy again. But I'll tell you guys more about that next week. I don't want to, like...
Wouldn't that supersede the traumatization because your second was like the sequel, and you just did better? Like RoboCop 2.
I shouldn't be super specific, but like a big VP in the company showed up and thought I did a good job. I made a Barbie theme and I got really stupid with it. You know me. I put the M in stupid, you might say. Yeah, but I'm really happy. Just thought I'd pop on. I saw y'all were still going. Thought I'd come hang out till the end.
Cool. Well, we're
nice. Glad to have you.
We got three more games to talk about, so feel free to hang out and we gotta continue on.
I must hurry because I've got Sea of Stars downloaded.
Oh man, I gotta fire that up tonight too. But next game, Retro Revengers, developed by Happy Meal and Undercoders, published by Shinyaden, released August 24th on Steam for $9.99. A retro style adventure platformer game inspired by hits of the past, featuring wonderful music created by Manami Matsume. Messed that up really bad. It'll take you on an eventful journey through the diverse environmental stages to encourage you to save the world of retro gaming. Purnell, tell us about your time with Retro Revengers.
That's how I would have pronounced it too, so we can both screw it up.
I was gonna say I've actually met her and I still don't know how to pronounce her name.
I think that was correct. I was telling Purnell about this last week, but I took a bunch of Japanese in school, and I think that was sound. I think you did it.
Cool.
Yay me. I'm taking it. I'm going with it. We own that. All right.
Yay so. Me.
merciful crap. Woo, die. So this game, and all of its applause, is about pretty much five nerds, gamer guys, who are all about the retro video game life. I guess you might call them retro revengers, maybe. I don't know. And one day, they put in a really odd cart that they just, one of them just happened to find at a flea market. They pop it in their game console, and boom! You guess it, they get sucked into the game, because that's what happens.
In style.
That's right. No zappers to be found, but all the party and fun that you'd expect.
Wait. But Nintendo controller belt that lets you freeze time?
Not even that. But you do get a cat.
Okay, I'm in. I'm back. I'm ready. Ready to love again.
Ready to love again. So once you're in this game, what you come to realize is that you have been tasked with coming into this world to defeat... I'm trying to remember the name. It's like the Triple A or something like that. It's like the Triple A Baron or some weird name, who is pretty much
the
looking
demon
to destroy
overlord of Triple A.
Thank you.
It's actually there we Triple go. H.
No. You get him in the last level. He comes through on the clutch.
Yes, I know. It's time to review the game, not play the game.
So what ends up happening is the game takes place over a series of stages, where each level is focused around one of these five guys. For example, there's one, my favorite being the cat, who has a claw attack, where when he pushes the attack button, he throws claw blades like slightly in front of him. He can charge it up, and when he releases this charge attack, he does a charge wave. He jumps really high. If he touches the ceiling, he grabs, and he's running on the ceiling. And then he puts a jump button again, he comes down. He also has the ability to do like a slide tackle of sorts. And another character who goes by the name of Machan, because God, he's like the most, he's probably the more annoying one, I think. He has a floaty jump, which drives me bonkers. But he has what they refer to as a multi-hadouken, where he just throws hadouken constantly in like a arc, like a cone fashion coming out in front of him. And if he charges his attack up, he throws two hadoukens in separate directions. And when they go over lava, it hardens the lava temporarily. Weird stuff like that. And there's five characters. They each have their own variation of a jump and their own type of main attack with a potential charge attack associated with it. And you run through the stages, defeating enemies. And each level also has its own sort of like gimmick that's associated with it. Like I mentioned, the aforementioned guy with the lava stage and has to freeze the lava. There's another one whose his level's gimmick is hitting orbs to make platforms rise and ascend and descend, and so on and so forth. And as you play through these levels, you're just attacking enemies. You're trying to get to the end of the level before you run out of time and ultimately defeat the boss that waits for you at the end. You also come across hidden treasure chests, where if you can go to a specific spot within the level, and to this day, I haven't figured out what triggers it, whether it's jumping or ducking or slashing. I just do all of it and hope that something happens. You trigger a treasure chest to appear, and it can either sometimes have health in it to restore your health, or it can give you a secret bonus item, which will give you points. Yes, very much retro classic style. We're thinking Yashiki over here, baby, where that was just a thing that was in certain games to give you points, and the points meant nothing, but that was okay. The game, interestingly enough, it has you replay the game once you've beat it the first time, but now when you do the levels, they're slightly harder, and you can choose any of the characters you want instead of the one that was associated with that level. So it's an interesting way for them to extend the gameplay at all. But the game itself is not particularly long. It's just wacky in what it is. They even have like a speed run mode available from the start where you can choose whether you want to run it as a steam mode or speed run mode or just do normal stuff. But I honestly liked the game. As corny as it is, as ridiculous as all the character art is, I enjoyed the game. And it did help having Manami Matsume's music in it. When you offered this to me, I was looking at potentially buying it because I wanted to hear her new music. Like I was going to buy it because of that. So I'm glad there's a fun game attached to it, too. Again, it's a very simple game, not just going to blow your mind or anything like that. But I think that's what they were going for, too. 100% retro throwback. So I think they succeeded at what they were doing there.
Well, it's $10. What's your verdict?
I think it's worth a $10 shot, so I'd give it a buy in this case. It's funny, the games that I was expecting to really want, they were like, and this one is like, I had no idea this was coming out of nowhere. I'd buy this.
You okay?
Yeah.
All right, well, I guess the next game to talk about is Ginsha, developed and published by Polarity Flow, released August 24th on Switch and Steam for $17.80. Ginsha is a unique atmospheric pixel art action-adventure platformer with special gravity shield and dash mechanics. It combines a versatile platformer core with RPG souls and crafting elements to an anomaly among Metroidvania games. Chris, there's a lot of buzzwords here. What's going on in the game?
Anomaly. An anomaly? Yeah. Okay, well, so this is a... this is a Metroidvania in the sense that this is Metroid. There's no vania about it. It's just straight up like... So what it is confusing. So there's some outer space wigs. Some, you know, wigs, like fake hair. That two of them plummet down to this planet. One, I guess, becomes a droid. The other attaches to somebody... And that person gets up, and that's your character. Thank you. Thank you, Purnell. I was about to do it myself, but save me the time. Yes. And then, yeah, you proceed to go through tutorials telling you how to run and shoot and stuff. So, and scan, because scanning is very important in this game, I think. I'm very lazy about it, so I have not been scanning. But if it's anything like Metroid, which it is... then you're going to want to scan a lot of stuff to get the best ending. Anyways, so yeah, this is basically a run and shoot, shooty thing that, also has a mechanic wherein you can hold the A button and jump with the B button to get a floaty shield, a shield that makes you floaty. And, you get a double jump right away. Of course you do. And, you know, there'll be things like power-ups that instantly give your, you know, restore your double jump so that you can do a triple jump, quadruple jump. As long as the things are still there, you can keep jumping, which is nice because, yeah, that's what you need to, you know, that's a good way to set up some obstacles and stuff. And, yeah, you also get a dash, but you don't find out about the dash until you're very far away from where knowing about the dash could be very useful for you. I'll get back to that in a second. So, shooting is either using the right stick to aim specifically at something. You know, you got the 360 kind of shooting movement, like Earthworm Jim. And, I don't know why that one was the one I went to. you can also, oh, thank you. Yeah, you can also lock on with the left trigger and, you know, onto enemies and shoot them with the right. And so that's kind of cool too. So yeah, basically the game, what I've been alluding to this whole time is that the game is very, mysterious. There's lots of icons, there's lots of, items, there's lots of facets to the game, none of which you get told about until you wind up, you know, until you like run across the computer that gives you like a brief tutorial on what the thing is. So it's like you have this dash ability, but you don't learn about it for a while. You know, you pick up crafting items, but the game doesn't tell you about crafting for a long time. You know, it took me until today to, like, figure out the leveling up system. It's like, you know, I guess you get experience points, but then you have to exchange them at a certain point that's also a save, and then you can... you know, upgrade your character, but then you can separately at any time upgrade your skills and like unlock new skills, which is a whole separate tree that they kind of tell you about in the four layer menu. I had a while trying to figure out this game. The other thing is that the game kind of just lets you go wherever you want, and you just kind of let the difficulty of the place determine whether you want to stick around there or like maybe move on to somewhere else. Yeah, the game's very, you know, it definitely doesn't hold your hand in any way, which could be to its detriment, considering that it does have a ton of tutorials, some of which will persist even well after you've finished that area. If you go back to the first area, you're going to get the first tutorials again. So that's an interesting choice to make. Having said, the game's pretty darn fun. It's all done in a pixel art style that I think is great for the backgrounds and the ambience and you know, different things like that. I think that the main character is pretty I don't know, they could have spent some more time animating this character. Like, just your legs move, your middle torso doesn't, and then your like wig, I guess, flows. Again, we don't really know what your character's name or personality or anything is. They just look like a mannequin upon which a alien wig has attached itself. So it's like, and that's in the you know, box art as well. I say the box art, I mean the box that appears on your Switch menu.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess some of this stuff is going to get revealed as you continue to play the game. So this game really depends on you being hooked by the gameplay loop to and the exploration to like get to those kind of things. And so far it's so good as far as that goes. I do enjoy playing this game. You know, I just like I said, it was hard to figure out. Now the game is pretty clever about some things. For instance, there's actually a hidden area within the first couple of rooms of the game that if you know how to use the dash move that they teach you, you know, in a little bit of a further area, or, you know, if you really want to trek back, which trekking back can be kind of a pain. But if you figure out how to get to this secret area, you can actually unlock an easier difficulty, which is a little incongruous, but I'm for it. There's also a mysterious robot in the middle of that area that needs something and you don't quite know what, and another thing in the game references that, so that's kind of like your clue, I guess. Yeah, weird. So basically, you know, at the end of the day, it's just, like I said, it's a, you know, it's a pretty good pixel art Metroid style game where you shoot robot things and you collect stuff, you scan stuff, you learn stuff, and then, you know, try and be better. It's weird because it totally made me think when I started it up, I was like, oh, this is gonna be like a roguelike, right? Because as soon as I die, they're gonna randomize this random thing. But no, it's not. It's weirdly enough, it's a fixed game, but it doesn't feel like one, which is really interesting to me. I guess that's what happens when you make your world a little open like that. But that's all good.
Also all good is the fact that their Nintendo Switch page has 4 uses of unique.
Yes, it does.
It starts off with Ginch is a unique atmospheric pixel art action adventure platformer, which we mentioned. You get to choose to be good or evil in Ginch's unique alien couple story and dive into an epic journey.
That's not unique, but also they don't explain that in the game at all. You get karma points for dialogue choices, and there are also angel and devil boxes that you can access that give you karma points, but at this point in my playthrough, it has not said anything about a couple story. I guess once I run into those NPCs or something, maybe that'll happen.
In under features, they again mention unique alien couple versus symbiont story, and then unique directional gravity shield mechanics.
That's not unique, that's in Metal Storm. But well, the movable shield is, the gravity thing is just kind of like they've used that in Metroidvanias before. I don't mean to argue with them. It's just you got to figure out a different word, folks. Yeah. This is the whole reason why we make fun of the word unique, is because it's misused like 99% of the time. And people really lean on that word.
Something that is unique, though, is the game's price at $17.80. What are your thoughts on that?
First off, what'd you say, Brooke? I only heard a bit of what I heard you say something.
Oh, just backing up. I just said, So, yeah, my bad. I'm just trying to be a team player over here, support my buddy Chris.
I love it. I love having the backup. Like, you know, Brooke is the Brooke is the hype man that cries a lot. That's right.
Thank you for remembering, dude.
She absolutely lives up to that reputation. 1780. Gosh, that's a tough one. So there's a lot of quality to this game. Again, without having, without the most of the systems being particularly intuitive, it's very hard for me to know exactly how deep the systems go here. However, just looking at the amount of skills that I can unlock and, you know, just kind of getting a general feel for like how big this world is, I'm going to be brave and push it into that buy it territory. Just know that when you start this game, you're not going to know much about what's going on, and it's going to be a while before the game is going to like show you its cards. So if that's appealing to you and you like the pixel art graphic style of like modern day, go ahead and pick this one up. Otherwise, you know, everyone else, I guess wait for a sale or just, you know, check it out, see if you like it.
Yeah. There is a launch sale until I believe Friday. You can pick it up for $16.02.
Okay.
10% off.
Is that just because that's 10% off, or is that a special number or something? I don't know.
It's 10% off of $17.80. It's $1.78 off. I love weird prices. I love them.
I love it when any game that's like trying to be edgy at all, but it's like just a little indie game, prices itself at $666.
I love that.
That happens a lot. I wish there was like
Xbox. I'm guessing that's a Switch thing. Do it a lot.
You do see it on Switch. Yeah, you see it on Switch sometimes. Yeah.
Anyway, one final game to talk about tonight is Dawn of the Monsters Arcade and Character DLC Pack, developed by 13AM Games, published by WayForward. It released August 24th as DLC for Dawn of the Monsters for $6.99. The Kaiju Conflict continues with Arcade Character DLC Pack. Purnell, it's a $7 addition to Dawn of the Monsters. What are your thoughts on this? What's going on in the DLC Pack?
There's not a ton to talk about here, but I can definitely feel like it's something I can recommend at least. As DLC, what you get is a new character. This character is essentially Voltron, so much so that the other characters in the game have one pilot. This one has four. And the thing that makes this character stand out or feel unique to the other characters in the that makes this character unique to the others is that their overdrive attacks actually change the weapon that they use as well. So, for example, by default, they start out using a sword. It's a weak but fast attack for this game anyway. And they can use that to do combat with their light and heavy attacks. However, if they get two rage counters up and they do in the button inputs for, like, I can't remember what the heck they're called, but it's like a specific attack, it'll actually go through the process of the attack. But then when your attack is over, they're now using axe. And this axe attack comes with a certain perk, like maybe it inflicts burn damage or something like that. And now you're attacking with the axe, which has its own different speed of attack, and it's more powerful than the sword. You will be using this attack until you decide to use another of your special attacks. And then when you use that one, boom, now you're switching to whatever other weapon you're using. Now, the character also emphasizes you going from one weapon to a different weapon. Because if you decide to just use your special for the axe again while using the axe, for example, you lose the beneficial like sub perk that comes with it. Like I said earlier about the fire damage or whatnot, you lose that if you switch to the same weapon. So it incentivizes you to cycle through your special and change the weapons as you go as well to find the right weapon for the right moment for maximum efficacy. The combos for that weapon, however, each weapon of her trio, it has a unique special attack, a special combo as well. So you'll be playing around with that. And the game does tell you what the button input is for them. It's primarily just holding the button, the attack button down at a certain sequence during your three-hit combo string. But it is there. So I think the character is pretty awesome, honestly. I still wish, I mean, I don't know. I still wish I could be faster in the Geek Club. That was my one gripe, even though I remember being like, but at the same time, it is a kaiju game. So I just wanted you to have that sense of weight that comes from being a giant monster or mechaloid stomping through a major city. The arcade mode is another thing that they add to this game. And with the arcade mode, it's pretty much exactly as it sounds. Instead of going from mission to mission and selecting different stages and whatnot, and then going back and watching story sequences, you just progress through 11 stages, flat out. And at the end of each level, you will gain access to a new upgrade for your mech that you can take into the next stage. And there are two variations on this. There's like the classic mode, where at the end of the level, the upgrades you can choose from are pre-established. There's no randomization involved whatsoever. But then there's also a rogue mode, which is the same game, except they randomize what the bonus options are for you. So it's almost like work with what you got. So it's an interesting way to go about that. And the last thing that I noticed, aside from, I guess there was like, I remember the Steam page having like character skins mentioned or whatever. I didn't care about that. But the last thing I feel like I mentioned or noticed when I booted up was that there's a trial menu added to the main mode now. And it's just like 10 levels that you can do, or 10 challenges per se, where they kind of shake things up a bit with who you're dealing with, who you're battling with, or the battle conditions you're faced with. And it's just more to kind of get out of the game. The arcade mode, in addition to just being an arcade style, it does also feature, if I remember correctly, like a sort of speed run mode towards like, hey, how fast can you get through the game? Because there's, well, I'm referring to, sorry, not speed run. There's a leaderboard. So it grades you based on how high of a score you get. So just like the old classic 90s arcade beat-em-up cabs, you beat the game, get a high score, you drop it on a global leaderboard and see how you fare against everybody else that's playing the game. So I genuinely already feel like the game is a solid time. I like it. And this content they give you, I think that's genuinely worth $7. The character alone is pretty solid, but the additional trials plus the different ways to just run through the main mode or main gameplay, I think they kind of supplement it. If anything, I'd say the DLC character was the main event for this, and the other two things were just there to kind of sweeten the pot.
All right, well, sounds like for $7 you enjoyed it.
I did so. I think it's worth buying if you like the game and you want, you know, one more character to meet the full. Also, if you were like me and was like, man, this game could really use Voltron, well, they gave you a Voltron variant. Good enough for me.
All right, sounds good. We're done. Made it through.
What we want. We're done.
Yeah.
Wonderful job.
Fun.
Thank you.
All thanks to Brookwood that we made it through. Your support. Yeah. For joining us. It's good seeing you. I wasn't expecting you, so it was a pleasant surprise to see you drop by. Thanks to Dave for coming on, doing his thing. Thanks to Purnell, Chris, and Aki for being here, doing your thing. Music. I'm going to see if I could get away with playing one of the Bray Wyatt songs for the music and see if I don't get a copyright strike from WWE. If I was able to play it, that's at the end. If not, we'll see something else.
Play Sunshine Lollipops.
Why?
Because I want to hear it. Sunshine Lollipops and Rainbows, everything. Good song. That song got played a lot over the car ride because someone put it on the playlist as a Simpsons joke. But lo and behold, unbeknownst to them, I like the song because of the Simpsons. And I was happy to hear it every single time it came on. And I sung along to it, too. In their faces, sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. Everything that's wonderful is what I feel when we're together.